this position that you held, did that last long? Were you in that position for quite a while?
Well, I can't really put a time span on it, but everything happened, as it were, quite quickly in those short few years. And eventually, I was made, I think I may have been made general manager or something or other for a short while. And then Ken Bishop and myself became joint managing directors, and Bert Cusack stood down and went, devoted his time specifically to the mill. And then in 1970 or 71, I was invited onto the board of the mill itself. The group board, yeah, of the mill. And I went up to an office in the mill itself, and my job was group deputy managing director of whatever constituted the group at the time.
Well, no, that was taking a big leap and a very responsible position, yeah, indeed, at an important time in the history, because at that stage the Clondalkin paper mills now was really the umbrella for many.
Yes, It was the, at that time, the emergence of ourselves and the Smurfit Group was quite a feature in our area of industry. So we, in the Clondalkin position at that stage, had taken over Gibson, the Gibson Guy Group, which consisted of Bailey Gibson's and Guy's of Cork and a few other subsidiary companies that were in that grouping itself. And we had taken over Saggart Paper Mills, which is just up the road. But that was more a strategic thing than anything else, because it protected water supplies. And the Bailey Gibson outfit, they were into packaging. And you'll recall at the time that a lot of groceries and sweets and vegetables and apples and all this sort of stuff were packaged in small paper bags. And Bailey Gibson's were very strong in that. They might, in fact, have been the dominant supplier. And also, they manufactured cartons for all sorts of foodstuffs. One of the things they did, too, was they made tea bags for lions and so on. Oh, you know, yeah. And they supplied a number of, what would you call them, smaller outfits who specialised in the distribution of packaging on a broader scale. But those smaller entities would have taken paper bags from Bailey Gibson and paper from the mill, okay, and might have bought other stuff from specialist manufacturers elsewhere. So that was the business of Bailey Gibson. In Guy's of Cork, they also made paper bags, but were stronger really in printing per se, which would range from anything to books to leaflets and so on, and cartons, of course, which Bailey Gibson also specialised in.
That merger with all the other paper, yeah, companies you mentioned, how successful was it from the beginning?
Oh, yeah, well, the mill was always under pressure as a paper manufacturer, because more suppliers from the UK entered into the market. Remember that the mill was set up really to deal with the situation during the De Valera years and so on, to provide whatever was needed paper-wise for the economy at the time. So, like, it moved from rough grades to finer grades, and indeed then exported quite a bit, as you have said yourself, to the United Kingdom.
It must have been very exciting times, because there was a whole lot coming together. Was there a government input in all of this?
Well, I can't really recall, like, what the situation, say, regarding grants and things like that was. I'm afraid I just don't remember that. And in any event, the accounting people would have handled that more than we would, you know. Though whatever was available would have been factored in. And whenever a project was put together, and it would come to the group board. But lest I give the impression that, like, I was a colossus of commerce, Bert Cusack, Dr. Cusack as he was the overriding leader. And he provided great leadership and great encouragement at the time. And he steered the board in the right direction and was very conscious that the mill was a monument, really, to the success of the state per se. And he was always mindful that whatever we did by way of accumulation of companies supported the mill in every way, so that we, as it were, kept that structure.
And at this stage, Dr. Cusack, had he taken a step back from his original role?
Well, Bert was quite an extraordinary man. He had immense talents. And really and truly, I walked in his shadow. And my brief was to look after whatever packaging companies we took over or set up, as the case may be. And my responsibility really was for those packaging companies. And he would, as it were, give me the full benefit of his knowledge and experience in the management of those companies.
Yes.
So I wouldn't like to suggest that my role was one of singular excellence, in that I had his support and guidance at all times.
Right. Who were the other members on the board?
Of the group board.
Of the group board, though.
Yeah. Well, there was Eugene O'Brien. There was... I'm trying to work my way around the table, so to speak. There was Jerry Guy. There was Michael O'Connor. There was Agnes McArdle Murphy. I'm a bit lost now for the moment.
Okay.
So maybe we could come back to that.
Yeah. But was it a very dynamic group of people at the time?
Well, all these men had come through the early days of the state, and most of them had developed their own businesses. So they were commercially alert. And and though they mightn't always had a full appreciation of what we were undertaking, they understood in broad terms most things and were willing to go along with a proposal, but not, as it were, as yes men. They would have from their own knowledge of their own businesses and from their own personal acumen an idea, a strong idea of what this was all about, and would ask relevant questions as to the financial structure, as to the market structure, as to the personnel situation, and discuss balance sheet situations quite ably.
Yes. There was quite a bit of turbulence, if I could call it that, with the workforce, because they, as you know, they went out on strike a few times. Did that draw back, you know, any of the work that was being done?
Well, let me put that in context. Any stoppage creates a problem. There's no question about that. And but remember, when you go back to the early days when Clondalkin Mill was set up, it was set up to employ people. That was its fundamental role, and to meet a need in the market because of the economic paralysis, if you will, of international trade. So that as a result of which, there were probably more people employed in the mill than would normally be acceptable. So if there was any sort of an engagement on maybe changing working hours or maybe downsizing in some departments, this would cause a lot of difficulty, because at that time, unions were quite strong, and workforces per se believed in the concept, as did people on the railway, that they had a job for life, you know? And this was a conflict between what is possible and what works. So there would have been a lot of, as it were, I won't say misunderstanding, but one had to fight one's corner to, as it were, keep the ball rolling. Mm-hmm. Now, management can say that the unions didn't understand really what this was all about, and the unions equally well could say management didn't appreciate that a man needs a job and has to feed his family and all these things. And so both parameters, when expressed volubly, obviously led to confrontation. But those confrontations were either long or short, but were always resolved, not always to the to the satisfaction of both parties. Mm. But certainly it could be said that in latter times, the numbers in the mill were a problem. Just looking at it coldly, like if you were looking at it from the position of an employee, needless to say, you wouldn't see it in the same light.
Was it getting too big acquiring or bringing together the other companies?
No, not really. You see, the other companies that were absorbed by the group weren't competing with the mill in any sense, in the sense particularly the mill per se wouldn't necessarily be a supplier of the subsidiary companies.
I see.
Do you know?
But
you could have, say, a union might suggest that they'd get their other members to walk out in support of a constituent part of the group in support of particular problem that was an issue at the time. But that was just a threat.
I see. Yeah. Can you remember all the different companies that came under this one umbrella?
Well, I'm hard-pressed to do that now, to tell you the truth. There were companies in... There were many companies in Ireland. There was some in the UK. And that was about it at the time. And then following the change of management later on, companies were added on from England, France, Switzerland, America, and Holland, I think.
Yes. Mm.